Hello and welcome to Changing Room 4, the Championship Rugby Podcast with Sid, Fids and Jamie. Welcome back to everyone that's listened before and welcome to all our new listeners. It's been an interesting week this week. We've had lots going on. Before we get into the rugby, how have you guys been?
Well, I'm a bit woolly-headed today, mate. Super Saturday yesterday, wasn't it? So, you know, it all starts off well and good, and then on the old WhatsApp group, some Knowles goes, oh yeah, this is a good idea. Let's down a pint of Guinness, ha ha, and then nominate someone to do it, ha ha, that'd be funny. And everyone's just sitting there going, you know, for the past 5 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it's been, saying, oh yeah, okay, well, this has been a year of this, nominating people to do it over, you know, video calls or whatever. And then everybody just ignores it. But then Super Saturday, everyone just bought into it. And then they all started, all the pints started flying about and everyone was doing it. And I thought, oh, I didn't want to let the side down. Next thing you know, 8 o'clock in the evening, I'm chinning bottles of limoncello.
Oh my God. What on earth? Yeah. Just, what, in your living room?
Yeah.
Just indoors. Oh my God. You know it's got to a bad place when you start doing that.
Look, I mean, you know, nothing says lad like drinking bottles of limoncello.
Absolutely.
On your own, absolutely. Indoors, yeah.
God. Fids, what about yourself?
Slightly less fruity than Sid's experience, I think, this weekend.
Okay.
Once again, enjoyed Super Saturday. Great start. Scotland, Italy, absolute points fest. Middle bit was a little bit more disappointing. And then the final entree for the evening, the Wales-France game, was an absolute delight to watch. Especially as...
Not partisan at all.
No, it was an absolute delight. I'm very happy, I will say that. As a neutral, it was a brilliant advert for the Six Nations. And as a non-neutral, it was fantastic to see France win in the last bit. And other than that, it's been a great weekend. And roll on line of duty this evening.
You're going to put off our listeners in Wales, Charles, with talk like that. With 25% of our listens from the UK come from Wales.
Oh, mate, the stats are through the roof on the
listener, stats, mate. The stats are out. We've only had 40 plays, but all stats are already going.
Don't tell them that. But hello to all our intercontinental listeners. Hey.
Yes, listeners in South Africa, listeners in the USA, you are very welcome on board. We're very grateful to have you here. We hope you enjoy it. I don't know how we managed to get people from all the way over there, halfway around the world, but there we go. It's happened. So hello to you guys. Okay, let's take a look at the scores from this week then. So first game was Coventry against Ealing at the Butts Park Arena. Coventry scoring a few more points than previous opponents, scoring 19, but Ealing smashing it out the park again with another 50 and another 8 tries. So 19-55 it finished there. Next up was Hartbury RFC against Doncaster at the Alpass Arena. Unfortunately for the home side, they lost 21-32, Doncaster getting a bonus point in that game. Next was a Jersey home match, but being played at Richmond, because, just to remind everyone, Jersey can't host any games because of travel restrictions at the moment, so all their games are away, but some of them being hosted as home. Richmond earning their first win of the season there, scoring 23 points to Jersey's 15. So a good result for them. Cornish Pirates hosted Bedford at Menai Park and got a bonus point as well. So 27-12 they ran out winners. And then the last game of the round was Ampthill against Nottingham at Dillingham Park, where Ampthill scored 31 points to Nottingham's 15. Quick review of the table then. That leaves There's quite a stretch between the top three. So Ealing on 15, Cornish Pirates on 14, Doncaster on 13. And then a 7-point gap down to fourth place Ampthill on 6. Saracens behind them on 5. Hartbury, Bedford, Coventry all on the same score. Richmond on 4. And winless Jersey Reds and Nottingham RFC on 0 points apiece down in the bottom. So, where to start this week? I think we'll just go through it game by game. Lots of talking points all over the place, I think. So, Coventry against Ealing. Who wants to kick us off on that one?
Well, I think something that we've said across the last few weeks is, you know, these professional performances from Ealing. I think they're continuing to put out a statement to the RFU to say that ring fencing is a very bad idea and please consider keeping a competition, otherwise we lose the rugby pyramid. But, you know, let's move away from that and talk about the actual game. I think what they will be very pleased with is their defence. Actually, it's been tested. You know, they've now conceded. It was three tries in the end. But it seems that, you know, that they were given quite a game by Coventry. And I think, you know, if you look at the halftime score of 12-all, you know, it's a battle. They're in a battle. And I think what will really please them is the way that they responded. And to come out and score four tries, I think, within the first 15 minutes of the second half starting, you know, that's a real response. And I think they'll be really proud to see that and be able to build on that as the weeks and rounds go on. And I think as well, it's you know, another eight tries, but it's great to see those tries sort of spread around. You know, they're not coming all one way. You know, we had their, you know, their captain, Rain Smith, picked up another double, as did their front row forward, Will Davis. He seems to be in a bit of a scoring vein. He got
he's,
two.
He's in a purple patch at the moment.
Well, yeah, absolutely. He's three in two games. So, you know, back rower as well, Simon Azokwe, on his first start for the club, picked up two. And then the others were shared around the backs. So I think, you know, they're really looking strong. And in terms of Coventry, you know, 12-all at half-time, you think, yeah, that's brilliant. That's probably the benchmark for them in terms of performances in the Championship. By all means, they caused Ealing problems. And I think if you look at it again, Luke Dolly, the hooker for Coventry, that's his third try. It seems that they've got a real strength. I know certainly two of his tries this season have been from the driving maul. So there seems to be some real strength that Coventry have got, and that really caused Ealing some problems. So, you know, for a first game for the weekend, I think that set the standard for one that was actually a very entertaining and brilliant advert for Championship rugby.
It sounds like they've got quite a strong forward pack there. Was it five or six of their tries came from the forwards for Ealing? So that's they seem like they've got a pretty dominant pack. I haven't been able to see much of Ealing yet, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it, that's for sure.
Just to expand on that half-time response, I think what you can kind of glean from that, you know, after the match and looking back on it, and we saw in some interviews with director Ropi, he said that at half time they addressed basically the urgency of the group, and he said that the kick chase was a big example of that, and how the energy just wasn't there in the first half, but then they managed to pick it up and turn it around in the second. And I think that kind of goes to suggest that it's not all just about players in this league. It's not just about we know who's going to win. You know, these guys have got a better team. It can still go either way. And, you know, 40 minutes in at 12-12, that was exactly it. But the difficulty that Ealing face now is, right, so they're three 50-point-plus victories in three games. How do you sustain that? And, you know, luckily they've got short seasons to do it over. But if it was a, you know, 20 whatever game or a 30 game season, you know, that would be really, really hard to sustain. So the question now is, can they sustain, you know, that level of performance all the way through? You know, try to put aside what other teams will bring. It's now their own internal battle, I suppose, that they're going to be fighting and seeing if they can keep that level of performance up.
Can I ask you then, Sid? I'm going to pose you a little teaser.
Oh, go on.
With that in mind, so now Ealing have scored 50 points in each of their three opening fixtures. Mm. If they get to a stage in a game where it's not just going right, it's just not clicking, you know, something's happening, but they're up by a score, you know, between sort of 7 and 15 points, do you reckon they're going to start getting a little bit nervy? Is it, oh, we might slip up here? Or do you reckon that mindset is completely, oh no, we're up 15 points, we'll be able to close it out? Or is it going to be a case of, oh, We're within a couple of scores here. This is unknown territory a little bit for us. You know, what do you think they'll do?
Well, there's any combination of things that could happen. What I think would almost be healthy for them, not good, but healthy for them, is if they were to find themselves in a little bit of hot water. So let's say a 10-game season was a normal thing. If about this time, you know, the next game, fourth game, third, fourth game, whatever, after a really, really good performance, you do have a little slip up. It just gives you a chance to step back and say, we're not invincible. You know, let's reevaluate. Let's look at, you know, what it comes down to. Is it really, if it's not, you know, their performance, if it's their, you know, determination for it, what are they playing for? If it's a tactical and a coaching issue, you know, what do they work on in the week, etc., etc.
It would be a bit of a reality check.
Yeah.
And stop them from resting on their laurels too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that actually helps them climb to a higher point than where they were before. There's a popular analogy about teams that win. I can't remember where I heard it first, but teams that win championships, you know, year after year and stuff like that. And they say about climbing a mountain, and when you're at the top of the mountain, you know, the peak is a hostile environment. You know, the air is thin. You're not supposed to be able to stay there for a long time. And so often that's why people drop back down. I'm not saying that, you know, after three games, Ealing needs to be worrying about their multiple championships or anything like that. But I'm just saying that level of sustained performance, you know, if they are going to get comfortable, it might be not completely detrimental, but it might be a little bit harmful toward them. And I think it would be perfectly healthy for them to have, as you say, a little reality check, a kick up the arse, many people would call it. But yeah, just that little slip to help them reevaluate and look at where they're, where the areas of improvement are for them. Even if those areas are small and they're difficult to find, if you can find what they are, that will help. And you know, for them and their ambitions to get into the Premiership in time, you know, they're going to need to come a long way still.
On to the Hartbury Doncaster match then. So this was a game that I did actually get to see. I caught the... I got the live stream, paid my £10, and
look at you!
Yeah, I know.
Someone's doing well.
Tell me about it.
Billy Big Bananas.
I found myself with a free Friday evening, and some rugby available to watch. So, it was a good game. It was a good game. Mm. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the highlights, but it was quite end to end. Doncaster did, I think, they did pick up an early lead, but it was very back and forth, and both teams attacked quite well, defended well. I was particularly impressed, actually, with Hartbury's fullback, Will Partington, who I believe was making his first appearance of the season, or at least his first start. His energy around the place was really, really good, and I remember thinking... He's got some really good vision. He was seeing the space really, really well at the back and using the kicks and running into that space well to really put the pressure back on Doncaster. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be for Hartbury because Doncaster did get the better of them with four tries. And they played very well for it, to be fair. There was lots of pressure in key areas, and certainly in the last 20 minutes or so, the pressure on the Hartbury line-out was brilliant. They stole three lineouts. Up until that point, nobody had stolen any lineouts, and then the last 20 minutes to steal three, it really, and they were key, they were within the 22, within their own 22 even, so it really took the pressure off and took the sting out of Hartbury's attack, because they did keep coming back.
I'm glad you mentioned a couple of bits there, because that's kind of what I took away from it as well. I think Doncaster in particular, the sharpness at the set piece, just everything was so tight. You know, the highlight was a try from the line out that then went wide, and the speed of play was really good. And that's kind of characterized, you know, you picked out the fullback there. I'm gonna pick out the Donny winger, Tom Spittle. He got two tries.
Jack Spittle.
Oh, my bad. Let's start there again. I'm picking out Jack Spittle then. You know, his two tries. It was quite an open game in some respects. It wasn't a broken game. I think people just sort of both teams prioritized, you know, tightness in defense, you know, close to the fringes, and that left a lot of space out wide, which made it a good game for the back three. But then, yeah, as I say, these set pieces, everything was real tight as well. And it kind of got me thinking.
His tries were good. Yeah. I did see both of his tries. Yeah. The first one was training ground off the back of a absolutely. Lineup, go out wide, pull it back behind the dummy runner, and he did finish it well.
Yeah,
and then
just exploit that space out wide. And this is
the
this
second
is,
one. Yeah. Did you see a second one?
Yeah, I saw them both.
Off the back of the line out, and then weave through what the commentator was calling the seam. I didn't know about this. It's not a term I've come across. Basically, the seam is where the back of the line out, there's kind of 5 meters to where the backs are stood.
Yeah.
And that's what they call the seam. So he basically came round, took the ball, cut inside, and scored on the blind side.
Well, there you go. So I think that there's a little bit of a difference emerging now, because maybe not historically, I don't know. Maybe tell me if I'm wrong. Audience, listeners, get at us on the socials. Jamie will remind you at the end. But historically, I think a lot of people have always said about the physicality in the championship. Everyone says about, you know, big tough lads, blah blah blah. But I think there is a bit more of maybe a focus on speed in the championship now, and the exploitation of the
attacking
of the wings, and the attacking play and the vision and stuff like that. And I don't know, maybe that's an indicator. There was a few more suggestions of it around the championship, you know, this week. But I think that sharpness around, you know, the not just, you know, the line out itself or whatever else, but also, you know, the hands through the backs moves and everything just looked so on point.
It was a good game for that. It was a great advert for skillful play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing that it is going that way. A friend of mine who never really played at any kind of real high level, but bloomed, you know, quite late on, and then went on to play second row at a decent level. He played an A-League game for Worcester, right, in the Premiership Cup. So, you know, the Monday night games and stuff like that. And he actually said that the physicality was okay, despite him being a pretty young bloke. He was only about 20, 21 at the time. The physicality was okay. It was just the speed of play, which was so much, you know, it was just a level above anything that he'd experienced before. And it looks like, yeah, the championship is matching the Premiership on that standard, you know, just making the closeness between the two leagues, you know, make it even more fluid. So, yeah,
that's definitely promising. I could definitely have seen some of those moves in the Premiership. Yeah. No trouble at all.
It's nice that you called out the nippy people, the speedsters.
Don't pretend you're one of them, Charles. Do not pretend you're one of them.
Well, hey, look, you know, I started out there, and gradually, as the years went by, I
gradually
moved closer and
drank more and more beer.
Yeah, that may have happened. But yes, I did gradually move from the wing closer and closer to the scrum. But look, you know,
didn't you end up at loose head, mate?
Didn't quite get that far. We stopped at 10.
Yeah.
You were a flanker.
In all seriousness, you know, talking about those speedsters, if we will, and you know, it was certainly one to watch for the Foley family, with Charlie playing for Doncaster.
Yes, I forgot about
Ben playing on
big
the wing
talking
for Hartbury.
Point.
Did you see their little scuffle in the dead ball area?
We always said we want to be able to celebrate all the great things about Championship rugby and like grassroots rugby as well.
Yeah.
Right, two brothers on opposing teams.
Younger brothers just scored a try.
Yeah.
One dives in on top of him, and then they start laying into
each other. A headlock. Holds him in a headlock. Doesn't let him get up. Just a little bit of needle there. It was
nothing wrong with the old-fashioned wrestle. But yeah, shout out to Ben for going 1-0 up in that case, he's top of the try scoring charts with 5 in 3 games.
Five, yeah.
So I just thought it was worth calling that out because who doesn't love a little bit of brotherly love?
It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch the commentators.
Any other league, they'd be banned for 2 games. they'd have a £10,000 fine.
Do you know what? If Mako and Billy were on opposite sides, I'd love to see it. They've never played. Yeah, they did used to play Saracens
and
Wasps.
Yeah.
But there we go. But in the end, Doncaster deserved winners with a bonus point win there, and sitting pretty at third in the table. So
still unbeaten.
I believe I cast a little bit of doubt on them last week, but they certainly proved me wrong. Next game up was Jersey versus Richmond. As I said earlier, was supposedly a Jersey home match, but it was played at Richmond. Richmond, third game into the new league for them, and they've got their first win.
This is what I'm going to say about Richmond. Okay.
Rich what?
Come on, Sid. That's a basketball reference. You should know that.
You set me up brilliantly. I can't believe it.
Unbelievable. Shut that up. Blank look on your face, and you just didn't know.
It was a shocked look at your face. Anyway, this is what I'm going to say
about,
before we go any further, about
about the
Richmond Athletic ground specifically.
Okay.
Right. Their groundsmen, right, what a job they've done. Their ground was so impressive. The lines in that, the shading and the
crisscross. Oh, I saw that.
It was like a tartan pattern on the Richmond Athletic ground.
They went all out with the lawnmowers, didn't they?
Yeah. God. They've really had some time on their hands. But I thought it was great.
It was beautiful.
It was incredible.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. No wonder they won.
I'd like to see more of it, personally. If you've got a talent like that, flaunt it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to see concentric circles or a spiral or just triangles, like a IKEA geometric pattern in the lawn. It'd be great.
Yeah. I just thought that set the tone.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. But
onto the actual rugby.
What a day for them.
On the topic of actual rugby.
What a day for them. What a win. I bet they're, you know, dead pleased with that. Tough opponents against Jersey as well. And it wasn't necessarily a, you know, really easy game. They were down a couple of points, especially at the beginning. It was really tight. And then they started to pull away in the second half. So, yeah, I bet they'll be buzzing about that one. Again, another one of those occasions where such a shame that we didn't have fans, because it would have been great.
I bet the Richmond fans
would
have loved
it. First win
of
the season there. Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, from my point of view and as a follower of this, I think having someone like Richmond come up into the league, compete, that's exactly what you want. Again, batters back that whole argument of ring fencing and bloody, bloody, blah. But for me, I think the really key takeaway, you know, I think we spoke about it, I think, in round one or round two, Poddy, that actually the fact that there's no relegation this year, it gives Richmond that opportunity to have that free shot and to try things and to work things out. And with the difficulties that we've got this year with COVID and, you know, Jersey travel restrictions, etc., you know, potentially this is a game that they targeted. And you think, do you know what? Jersey, let's take them on. Let's give it a go. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
And I think they played the more dominant of the two, which got them the result. I think it was both sides scored 2 tries each?
They did, yeah. So I'm just looking at it now. So the first try went to Jersey at 25 minutes, but then Richmond scored 2, and Jersey didn't get their last try. It was so they were only on 10 points at 78 minutes, but
So, you know,
and then got their last try at 78.
Yeah, from that, you know, I think Richmond deserved it. It was almost an all-round performance. I think they might be disappointed that they couldn't have scored a couple more. But for a first win of the season, I think it should give them great confidence. And you just got to say, you know, that in terms of Jersey, you know, I don't think there's going to be any issues there. Just it's difficult for them, the lack of preparation. You know, then their first week, they had the bye, so they didn't get that initial hit out. And then their first game was away at Saracens, which is probably not the game that you really want.
Not the game you want to start with.
And it's tough for them. I don't know what their situation is with regard to training, etc. I don't know if they're over here permanently for the next 10 weeks or if they keep channel hopping. I don't know what the situation is, but that can't be easy.
I'm just looking at the previous meetings between Richmond and Jersey. So Richmond weren't in the league last season, but in the 2018-2019 season, Jersey absolutely had the wood over Richmond with some big scores there, and this has totally flown in the face of that. So yeah, credit to Richmond, and it's good to see them coming up into the league and not struggling from the off. So see that team come up and get in amongst it early on.
Good luck against Saracens next week.
Yeah.
Nothing to fear.
I'd forgotten that.
Nothing to fear.
No, Pirates have already proved the point on that one. So that is our next game. Cornish Pirates against Bedford. Another bonus point win for the Cornish Pirates. Comfortable winners in the end.
Well, as my second team,
oh God,
very pleased. And I think as well, you know, again, it goes back to what I said last week. I think after the Saracens result, Cornish Pirates are a target. You know, if you can beat Cornish Pirates, they're the team that put one over on Saracens. So I think they put a little rod on their back, as it were. But once again, thoroughly professional performance. Picked up the bonus point as well, which, you know, could be crucial when it comes down to, you know, the ending of the season. You know, it depends what happens with Saracens, but you know, let's. You know, for argument's sake, say Ealing are there already, and then it's a fight for that final spot. You know, that bonus point that they picked up could be vital. So they're doing exactly what they need to do to put themselves in with a shot. So, but yeah, I thought they were well drilled, stuck to the game plan really well, and it delivered them the bonus point win against the Bedford side that, you know, off the back of their round two win against Hartbury, would have been looking at this saying, yeah, we're in with a shot here of going away and turning them over.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we spoke about Bedford's three yellow cards in the first round as well. They've got two yellow cards in this game. It looks like they do. Again, I don't know the circumstances of them, but it looks like they do need to buck their ideas up a bit with regards to some of the discipline. But that certainly will have helped Pirates. May not have been the ultimate cause of the loss, but it certainly would have helped them. But something I've picked up on with Pirates is that the kicking does seem to be a bit off at the moment. They've scored five tries and only one conversion. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know where the kicks were, and I don't know what the weather was like. But to only have a 20% success rate from your conversions and your kicking, it's not ideal.
Absolutely stinks of a Sid Young kicking clinic there, doesn't it?
I think that. Well, if you are listening, Sid Young is available for drop goal coaching clinics.
That's exactly right, and coaching of all types. But yeah,
legend has it he was speaking to Elliot Daly during the week about drop goals.
God, yeah, they didn't have any penalty opportunities, so that does leave his Luke Scully was the kicker, and he's sitting at a 20% kick rate there. That's really not good enough at the moment at this level, is it?
I agree with that. I hate people that that really get into. Do you remember what bleeding game was it? Was it Autumn Nations Cup and Farrell was having a really bad day off the tee, but England, I was about to say we, but you know, neutral. But England eventually won the game, and then people were screaming for just let George Ford take the kicks or whatever. Like, they've got a switch kicker. When do you switch kicker? And like, in the professional game, with kicking like that, I think you to take that away from someone is just a massive blow to them, and with each failed kick is also a bit of feedback for the next
kick. Are you talking about and taking it away from the mid-game or between matches?
Well, the point I'm getting on to is basically that when there's a situation like that where you know you have a really good, consistent kicker and they're just off, you can't make drastic changes. However, like, we can get into the stats of it a little bit more, but Jamie, if it's something that you're picking up on, if you say that the kicking game is off, I think that's is something that if you're playing not just at championship level, but, you know, winning your early games and you could be on the way to, you know, a top four finish, you need to have a kicker that is going to be able to consistently put over, you know, conversions and you know, for even in one game to miss that many.
I'm just looking at his previous match as well. I don't want to be unfair to Luke Scully, and call him out on one bad game. So I'm just looking through his previous stats, and he in the last game against Richmond, he converted two of the four tries and one of the two penalties. So he was at a 50% kick rate there, success rate. Mm. Which again isn't really high enough. I don't know the Pirates team well enough to know if they've got any alternative kickers, and obviously you don't want to give him the shepherd's crook for a couple of bad games, but it might be something that that the coaches might be watching.
No, absolutely. Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, I don't, you know, even without considering, you know, a change of kicker or anything like that, I just think it's that when you're playing at this level, that needs to be an area of your game that's a bit of a non-negotiable. Yeah. You need to be a kicker that's capable of those things, and under pressure.
If Pirates are going to continue to compete for the top spot, because they are currently up there, they're unbeaten, they've got two bonus point wins, but for the rest of the season, if they're going to continue to compete for one of the top two or three places, they're going to need to slot their goals, aren't they?
Absolutely, spot on.
Yeah, don't feel I can add anything more to that. I think you've got to take your opportunities. And, you know, as much as I say that it's great that they're picking up these bonus point wins and the bonus points could be important, you know, the argument is that points difference is equally as important and it may come down to points difference. So it is something that, you know, hopefully they'll be working on. But as you say, not to call them out on one bad game, but it's a pressure, isn't it, on a fly half or the nominated goal kicker's shoulders that you've got to make those kicks. That's why you're there. That's your one of your main job roles. So
yeah, and look, if he'll be a consummate professional about it. If you know, if a team's lineout's not going well, the forward pack would be you know, working on it midweek, and they'd be told about it. They'd know about it at training, and unfortunately, that's the nature of being a kicker or of being a fly off, and it comes down to, you know, that feedback.
The spotlight is hard, very much on you.
It's harder to give negative feedback to one player, but look, that's part of the game, and it comes down to one person. And so hopefully, yeah, they'll work on that, and hopefully it'll pick up.
Damn on. So the last game of the round was Amptill at home to Nottingham. Amptill really ran away with that. Five tries, 31-15. And I did notice on the score sheet that four out of the five tries were scored by front rowers. Who loves that? Who loves that?
I tell you who loves that. Other front rowers. They're the only ones.
The front row union.
Other front rowers.
Yeah.
The front row union. The ABC club. I had a little dig into how they were scored, and it seems like Amptill have really got the driving maul sorted this season. Three off the back of a driving maul. They certainly worked out how to set one up.
Well, you know, that's it. If you're if you do really drill your set pieces, you know, and if you drill your driving maul in particular, it can be so effective. Look at you know, Exeter have always been kind of the flagship example of what an effective driving maul, you know, in short range can do. You see that through their days, even from when they were in the Championship all the way through to winning premierships and European Cups. Like, they've just got that nailed down, and when you've got that nailed down, it can be really effective.
Yeah, it was Dave Ward for Ampthill. Previous Harlequins in England set up hooker Dave Ward. He scored a couple off the back of the driving maul, capitalised.
Yeah, there you go. So he's someone that, you know, is going to be a leader in that pack, and he's played all kinds of games in all kinds of environments, and he'll be able to, you know, really, really nail the requirements of that role in terms of setting a solid base at the scrum, as well as, you know, hitting his targets in lineouts and setting up the lineouts and finishing them off. And goes to show that it can be effective, and it's been effective over Nottingham. Leaves Nottingham in a funny old place. Teams really start to pull away, and some of them start to adjust their game, whereas Nottingham are kind of in limbo now. What do you build off of? What do you change? I've not got the answer for that, but we'll see.
Fids, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it shows the value of the set piece, doesn't it? And if you do your drills really well, it brings their rewards. And if you can do your things really well and cause opposition problems. So if you, for example, start with one driving maul and it earns you the points, and then that sort of mentally puts you in that headspace. Oh, we can do this again. We've got this. We've got them at this point. And I think that's what Ampthill did. I think, you know, they had the opportunities to go to the corners rather than kick goals for penalties. Then that's obviously what you're going to do. You're just going to keep hammering that nail in.
It really helps when you can back your forwards exactly. Like that. When, as a captain, you know that your forwards are on one. And you can almost rely on them to
Think, you know, we spoke briefly about it last week, being sort of a battle of the basement boys at this current moment in time, not necessarily saying that that's where these two clubs will end up, but for sort of Ampthill to come out like that, put a bonus point win on, you know, it's a real statement. And again, I think it's a shame that they're on a bye next week. You know, you put in that performance and all you want to do is just go and back it up.
Yeah.
But now you've got another week off.
Yeah,
and
that is true.
Know, does that disjoint things a little bit? And I think that would be a frustration for them. And, I think Nottingham, I think they've struggled because, you know, at least Ampthill had a bit of a pre-season. Nottingham didn't have anything. The first game was Ealing. Then they had a bye. So they haven't really had any rugby. And they've not really had any game time. So, you know, things might still be settling down and partnerships gelling. And, you know, that takes a bit of time. And with this sort of truncated season, you just don't get the opportunity to have these matches where you just can't put performances in. You need to be on it from the very start, and I think that's potentially having an effect.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing with the bye weeks, isn't it? It's a bit of a double-edged sword. Sometimes it can give you a good rest to refresh and come into the next match really raring to go, but equally, like you've just said, off the back of a solid win, you want to go and back it up the following week, don't you?
I think so, and I think
Ampthill, unfortunately, not able to do that.
I think that's right, and you know, if you look at how they fall for some of the other clubs, I think Ealing have got the best draw, that their bye isn't until round 11, so they get all their fixtures in, they get everyone up to match fitness and sharpness, and if they do make the final, that's when they get that rest, and I think that's probably where the rest is vital. I think right now people could probably go for it a little bit longer or go at it a bit harder, and it's normally the end of the season that you start seeing people's fitness flag, and I think that's just when Ealing get their rest. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, it's the same for everyone because everyone's got a bye week, but I just think right now, if I was in Ampthill's camp, what I'd want to do is go out and put another performance on. So they're my thoughts anyway. They're probably not thinking that. They're probably like, yeah, we've got great result, week out on the lash, brilliant.
I don't think they'll be out or on the lash. But they're certainly doing quite well to move up to fourth there. So even though there is already quite a gulf between the top three and all the rest, 7 points between third and fourth, that's after 3 weeks, that's quite significant.
I think so as well, but I think we've got to remember that with this season and how it's working with the bye weeks, we're going to have sort of, I think, this concertina effect, really, that we're going to see teams sort of jump ahead and then they might not play for a week and it will all even out and
get pulled back slightly.
People will just sort of catch them up a little bit. But, you know, for those three teams, Ealing, Pirates and Doncaster, to be 3 from 3 and to have that cushion sort of mentally is a really positive thing for those three teams. It just gives them that ability to say, okay, well, if we do have a bad week, if we can just pick up a point, we're still a good 6-7 points ahead of our nearest rival. So
it will be interesting to see how it plays out. Okay, shall we move on to previews and predictions?
I don't know, do you want to?
So just, yeah, I think so. Let's do it. So just a casual reminder of how it panned out last week. Charles and Sid, both only on 2 out of 5. 2 out of 5 there.
Like Luke Scully's kicking performance.
Hey. We don't want to make enemies this early on in the podcast, Charles.
We've lost a potential fan there.
I think you need to apologise.
Sorry, Luke. But Brad, Sid and I, we are the consummate professionals at this podcast game, and we will try and improve our match predictions.
Yes, absolutely. You need to take a long, hard look at yourselves in the mirror. But I'm going to maintain my humility on 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 predicted correct there. The only one I lost was Hartbury, unfortunately not coming through for me.
That's the one that matters, really, isn't it?
just a touch. So let's have a look at what fixtures are coming up next week and see who we think. Okay, so Amptal on a bye, as we discussed. Bedford welcome Jersey Reds to Goldington Road. Fids, who do you reckon?
Just on current performance alone, and the fact that Bedford are the home team, I'm going to say the Blues.
I also would like to see Bedford take a win here, just because I fear that if they were to lose, they would find themselves again in that kind of little limbo state where, you know, they're losing by a little bit, they're winning by a little bit. They're not really defining their play at the moment. So I'd like to see, Bedford come away with a win there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Bedford as well. I think the coaches are probably going to try and have a word about sorting out their discipline a bit during the week. It's let them down on a couple of occasions this season. But I think they'll probably try and put that to Bedford. Across the board we've got Bedford there. That was such a bad joke. I'm sorry. I apologise to all our listeners, all our many, many vast numbers of listeners. Bedford, yeah, all across the board, Bedford there. Next one then. Oh, this will be a good tie. Doncaster Knights at home to Cornish Pirates.
I think for me, game of the weekend. Two unbeaten teams, yes. Something's got to give. I think ultimately Cornish Pirates will edge it.
Or you reckon an away win, Charles?
I think so. I think they've done enough in their game so far that they've ground them out. Yes, they've won the last two with bonus points, but I think they've more ground those out, and I think that'll just help them.
Sid?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Pirates as well. Off the back of like the conversation that we had last week about, you know, Doncaster not really coming away with massive wins and stuff like that, I think that Pirates have really sort of set their stall out as a dominating team, and I think they're just on their way to cementing that.
It's a tough one. It is a tough one. I think if I can try and arrange to be available to watch that one, I will, but because I think that's going to be a very good contest. I'm going to go slightly against the grain and go for Doncaster. I think they put in a good showing at Hartbury. I feel like they're finding their feet a bit more already from the initial couple of close matches early on in the season. I think the home advantage might just edge that one for them. So I'm going to go Doncaster. Next up is Nottingham at home to Coventry. A bit of a battle down towards the bottom of the table, though Coventry do have a win behind them. What do we think? Sid, let's go to you first.
As much as I'd love to see Nottingham get some momentum behind them, I can't see that Coventry are going to let that one go, so I'm going to say Coventry for the win.
See, great minds think alike. I think Coventry will try and target this bounce back from you know, their game this weekend. I think they put in a bit of a performance in the first half against Ealing, and I think that'll stand them in good stead. So I'm also saying an away win for Coventry.
As if you just claimed that anyone on this podcast has a great mind.
Well, that's outrageous that you think we don't.
I'll let other people be the judge of that. I'm going to go for Coventry as well. I don't like to see us all go for the same sides, but I think it's...
You just want to win. That's what it is.
Okay, Coventry 2. The next two are going to be a bit too predictable, I think. We've got Richmond at home versus Saracens and Ealing at home versus Hartbury. So I don't think I need to ask, but I'm going to anyway. Sid, who do you fancy for those?
Yeah, I think the obvious ones, Saracens and Ealing, will get the win. However, it is going to be interesting, particularly that Saris-Richmond game. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of team Saracens put out. It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond can front up against them. There were some real standout players in that Richmond performance, and I'd like to see just how they front up against what everyone still considers to be elite level Premiership players. So yeah, I'd like to see Richmond put in a good performance, but I still think that Saracens are going to take the win, and I think that Ealing are going to take the win against Harper as well.
I will echo Sid's views. I think Saracens will win. I think it will be comfortable, but what I would like to see is that Richmond performance, off the back of picking up that win this weekend. I'd like to see them play with a little bit of confidence and not worry about the fact that they're playing Saracens, but I think it will be comfortable for Saracens, and I think Ealing will be comfortable against Hartbury.
I'm going to have to go for the same, obviously. Saracens and Ealing, you can't really look past them for those two matches at the moment. Although it does mean, boys, that you've both gone for the exact same picks.
Yeah, great
this
match,
week.
Like I said before.
So
I look forward to the 5 points.
I've gone for Doncaster instead of Pirates. So, yeah, not a particularly
such a contrarist.
Not particularly varied week of predictions there. I do have an apology to make to Charles, because I realised you actually got 3 out of 5 last week. Three out of 5.
Fantastic.
In your predictions.
Oh, Mark. Shit.
Yeah, Sid's sitting down. It's lonely down there, isn't it, Sid?
What did I get then?
You got Ealing, Doncaster and Cornish Pirates.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Last play. So, that brings us nicely to Sid's last play.
Oh, you know what time it is, lads. Sid's last play. Right. Quick one. Quick one today. Because Jamie keeps telling me off.
We just don't have time. As much as I'd love to spend half an hour playing your
basketball
games.
Do you mind,
Jamie?
I'm trying to get on here. Mate, we're on the clock. Okay. Right, inspiration this week comes from... what did it come from?
This is why it takes half an hour.
Who played Italy? Scotland. Scotland played Italy. Scotland's biggest ever... winning margin over Italy at the weekend in the Six Nations.
52-10.
And so it got me thinking about record performances, winning margins, record losses, etc., etc. So I've just got a few questions here about record performances in the Championship. Okay. Again, research was great fun for this. There's so much that you can go into.
I bet it was.
But I've tried to keep it short. Okay, so you can take some guesses. Point will go to whoever guesses closest. Okay, so we'll start off the largest home win, which I think might also be the biggest losing margin. So. One question and the same. Shall I tell you the teams, or do you just want to guess what the points were?
Give us the teams.
Newcastle at home to the Rugby Lions. The Rugby Lions, who've been demoted from the Championship a record 4 times, now playing in Midlands 1. Shout out, Rugby Lions.
96.
96?
Well, it's a record, isn't it? It's got to be big.
Yeah, I know, but that's
it's a record, isn't it?
That's really getting on for some.
So Fids is saying 96.
96, that's big. If I go 95.
No, don't be a knobhead. Just say what. Otherwise, I have to do a whole new thing. I have to, like, make you write your answers down or something. Right? Just give me what you actually thought.
I think it is going to be quite sizable if it's both the biggest losing margin and the biggest home win. I will go for 75.
I'll tell you round by round. So the winner of that question there, Fiddler, you were closest.
Oh.
You didn't get quite enough, though.
No!
The final score of that game on the 5th of October, 1996, was 156 points to 5.
In a championship match.
Yeah, so... Oh.
You got your money's worth that day, didn't you? Points-wise.
Yeah.
If you're a Newcastle
fan. Yeah. So you've got a 151-point difference.
That's there. Mammoth.
There were 24 tries scored.
When did you say this was? Yeah,
that was the 5th of October, 1996. Maybe it's on YouTube.
I think the standard of the championship has come up quite a lot since then.
Yeah, it is interesting to see where, you know, sort of where these records take place in terms of, you know, era.
Okay, what's the next question then?
Okay, question two. That was, we were looking at the largest home win. So now we're looking at the largest away win. This was Leeds Carnegie 1 away against Manchester.
84 points margin.
Going big there.
84 points, okay. 84-point margin.
I think it's somewhere in the same ballpark. But 150 points. If it's going to be back in a similar time, let's go 95.
Leeds Carnegie won that game 104-0.
One apiece.
So, Jamie, you said 95, didn't you? Yeah. So, you're closest on that one. One apiece. So, that's 104 points.
When was it?
That weren't in the 90s.
When was it?
So, this was on the 8th of April 2009. So, not a million years ago.
Okay.
104 points away. Decent performance. All right. So, we're 1-1, 1 point each. Question 3. Best points difference in a season. So over the whole season, points for and points against, obviously, this lot had a good points for. So how many points for did they have? Points difference. They had a positive points difference. What was that positive points difference? Bear in mind, this wasn't a 10-game season.
No.
This was a full season.
456.
456.
Well, yeah, if it's one of those seasons where they've won 104-0, you only have to win the other games, like 30-odd and 40-odd.
if you're winning a game 104-0, you're having a pretty damn good season. So I'm going to go for 650.
Nah, you're wrong. You're wrong.
22-game season.
In 2007-2008, when Northampton Saints were in the Championship, they ended the season with a points difference of 978.
Yeah, exactly. It was going to be big. So, do you know what? My initial reaction to the question was, is it going to be over 1,000?
Yeah, it's very close. I bet they'll be pretty annoyed, actually, that it wasn't 1,000.
I know.
But look, like we said at the top of the show, we want to celebrate, you know, these anomalies with grassroots rugby and, absolutely, you know, even up to the elite level.
Absolutely.
You get these mad stats. So, yeah.
How many questions in the last play?
We're only going to five. We're only going to five.
So James, 2-1 up.
I've got a bonus point question, but yeah. We looked at best points difference. It'd be rude not to ask who had the worst points difference. well, okay, no, not who had it, but what was the worst points difference? Northampton in 07-08 had a positive points difference of 978. What's the worst points difference?
Minus 500.
So, yeah, so it is a minus number, okay? So, Jamie's saying minus 500.
Minus 600.
Ooh.
Fids is saying minus 600. The correct answer, West Hartlepool in the in the 1999-2000 season.
Oh, it's going to be massive.
Had a points difference of... Great season, that one. Had a points difference of minus 898.
So takes
the point there.
Bloody hell. That takes us neatly to a decider.
It's not scripted, ladies and gents. Okay, decider. This is a great question. I done a bit more research afterwards, and it was really interesting to read about. But in the spirit of the grassroots connection to the championship and everything else, this is a great stat. How old is the oldest appearance of a player in the championship? So
what we say, is it years? Is it years or years and months? Or
I've got it in years and days.
Years,
mate,
and days.
I've
okay.
got it down to the minute. So the person with the oldest player to ever play in the championship, how old was he?
53.
Whoa! 53. No.
I've gone for it.
No.
Fold.
You'd be blowing at 53, wouldn't you?
Not a chance. Not a chance. I am going to go with 53. That's ridiculous.
So old.
I'm going to go with 43 and 200 days.
Okay, so that's a fair bit younger. Still, I mean, to be playing just the second level of English rugby at 43 is one hell of an achievement. Okay, interestingly, Fids, you're over.
But I'm under.
Jamie, you're under.
So who's closest?
Who's closest?
That 200 days might make all the difference.
I can tell you that the oldest player to ever appear in the championship was Graham Dawe. England appearances to his name. Played all over the Premiership as well, at hooker. He played for Plymouth Albion in the year 2008. Again, so
yeah,
not too long ago. And he was 49 years and 17 days. So Fiddler's nicked it.
No!
He's absolutely nicked it.
Oh!
So 3-2 to Fidd. 49 years old.
That is unbelievable.
49. Fair play.
Incredible. Playing at hooker. Went on to coach and manage at Plymouth Albion. As I said, played all over the championship. The hard man's hard man. He gets described as... I've done a bit more reading on him. I won't go on about it, but look him up. Graham Dawe. D-A-W-E. Wow. Incredible bloke. 49
Sounds like
years
it.
Playing in the championship.
Sounds like a legend.
Amazing. So Fiddler takes this week's last play. Well done.
So he's got a 2-1 lead. 2-1 lead for the
2-1.
Season.
Yeah.
God, unbelievable.
Happy days. I'm thrilled.
Well done, Fids. That brings us to the end of the podcast for round 3. It's flown by. I've enjoyed it. And we've been very busy this week. We've created ourselves some social media. So if you want to give us a little follow and a little tweet or little share, then we're at changingroom_4 on Twitter and the same on Instagram. Send us an email if you want. changingroom4podcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. What you enjoy, what you're not enjoying, what you want to hear about more. Just say hello. Anything. It'd be great to hear from you if you want to get in touch. You can also find us now on all kinds of listening platforms. So we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, which should be on all your favorite places to go and listen to podcasts. So please give us a listen on there if it's easier. Sid, thank you for all your insight. You enjoyed yourself?
Cheers, Jamie. I've had a great time. Thank you.
Good stuff. Fids, thank you.
There is no other way I'd rather spend a Sunday evening.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So until next week, we'll see you then.